You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Staying a step ahead of cyber threats can be the difference between thriving and being thwarted. Afternoon Cyber Tea with Ann Johnson has insights for cybersecurity decision makers striving to succeed amid rapid change. Each week, Ann Johnson, Corporate Vice President for Cybersecurity Solutions at Microsoft, talks with key security experts to explore perspectives on implementing new tech, next-generation security risks, and the current and future state of the cybersecurity industry. Afternoon Cyber Tea is available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Charles Ingram, are you ready to play?
This is the show we're going to pitch.
The classic TV game show.
We have a top prize of £1 million.
It's multiple choice, which has never been done before.
We got 9 million viewers.
In the hot seat, Diana Ingram.
You must go onto the show.
It's my turn.
Who have you brought?
My wife. You better. She played before.
Oh.
You know, when I'm at home, I guess wrong 80% of the time.
Okay, something's weird.
My strategy has worked so far.
He's a real dodgy one.
Normal people don't play like this.
Charles, for £1 million.
Guilty! I'm calling the police.
We're placing you both under arrest.
Charles Ingram is completely innocent.
Ladies and gentlemen, Charles Ingram! Let's play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
That was a clip from Quiz, a three-part limited series premiering on AMC May 31st that tells the extraordinary and sensational story of how Charles and Diana Ingram attempted an audacious heist on the quiz show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Major Ingram, his wife Diana, and a third accomplice who was sitting in the audience were accused of cheating their way to £1 million on what was the most popular game show on Earth in 2001. The couple stood trial in England for conspiring by coughing during the recording to signify the correct answers to the multiple-choice questions posed to the major by host Chris Tarrant. At least that's the version you've heard in the media. But now Quiz throws some doubt on that theory while at the same time exploring the rise of obsessive fan culture and the lengths to which TV networks will go for big ratings. And today, Sean Clifford, who plays Diana Ingram, joins me on the podcast to recall her own memories of growing up watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with her family and how the game show became a national obsession across the UK and then all across the world. Sean talks about getting to work with Michael Sheen and Matthew McFadden of HBO's Succession, what it was like to feel the tension when she sat in the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire hot seat, and what she hopes will happen when Charles and Diana Ingram's conviction is up for appeal later this year. Plus, she talks about her Emmy-nominated role as Claire in the hit television series Fleabag and her longtime friendship with the show's creator and star, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Coming up with Sean Clifford in just a moment. Sean Clifford has been a mainstay of the London stage for over a decade, and more recently has become a favorite of American audiences for her role as Claire, the sister of the title character in the BBC comedy Fleabag, which earned her an Emmy nomination last year. And more recently, she's played Martha Crawley in the ITV and Amazon Studios limited series of Vanity Fair. Now she's playing half of the husband and wife duo who tried to cheat the British version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in 2001, in a 3-part limited series for AMC called Quiz. Sean Clifford, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Hello.
Well, I read that you hail from Ealing, the queen of the suburbs.
Have you heard of Ealing?
Yeah, I have. I've been there.
Oh, my God. How come?
I was going to Ealing Studios once. It's probably easy to guess, but spent some time there. Went to Broadway, the mall.
Oh, my God.
What was it? The North Star Pub? Have you ever been there?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yeah, I spent much of my youth in
the North
really?
Star. Yeah. Yeah, that was a charming little place. I loved it. Yeah, so lovely. So how long have you lived? Do you still live in Ealing?
No, I do not. I've abandoned Ealing. I'm sorry, Ealing.
Okay.
I think I just have that typical kind of association from my youth with it. So
yeah.
I'm actually southeast London now.
Oh, okay, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. I love London. By the way, totally random fact, Ho Chi Minh was a dishwasher in one of the old hotels in Ealing for a few years, apparently.
Wow.
I don't know how I know that. I have no idea where I know that.
Never knew that.
Yeah. Now, you know, of course.
I'll take that one back with me.
Yeah, too. And of course, you have Ealing Studios, famed for the early Ealing comedies, and I think Doctor Who shoots there. Was any of your desire to go into entertainment influenced by your proximity to that legendary place?
It wasn't. And to be honest, I didn't know about it until I was an adult. No, my influences were predominantly theater growing up. And that's where my love of acting came. And my kind of love of screen that I have now has come much later. So yeah, there's a lot of theater. Yeah.
When did you first decide that you wanted to go into acting?
Genuinely, I was about 7 years old.
Really?
So yeah, I went to like a little local theater group that my older sister was already attending. And they would do a show every year. So I played a munchkin in The Wizard of Oz. And like a rite of passage for all actors, I think. And and then I got a little spooked. And so I decided I didn't want to go back the next year. So instead, I just went and watched my sister.
Uh-huh.
And I sat in the audience with my mom. And I realized, I've only like become conscious of this as an adult. But I know that when I was watching them doing The Little Mermaid, I had this overwhelming feeling that I needed to be up there and not here in the seat that I was in. And I do say it like I'm in the present because it's still, I can feel it as strongly as that. And so that was the first moment. Then there were other sort of key moments. I saw, I actually saw Clark Peters in a production of Guys and Dolls at the National Theatre that changed my life when I was 14. There was a school production of Arthur Miller's The Crucible. There was another huge moment in my life. I was in a production of Little Shop of Horrors at school. So there were lots of like cumulative moments.
I saw that you did Beauty and the Beast too. So you can sing.
Well, I can sing, although I'm not very confident about singing, but it wasn't a musical version. It was it was a very dark feminist retelling.
Oh,
of
even better.
Beauty and the Beast, yeah.
And how fabulous.
So my character was called Beauty, not Belle, and she tore off her dress and had very, very cool trousers and braces on underneath, or suspenders you would call them, I think. Yeah.
And I read that you met your Fleabag creator and co-star Phoebe Waller-Bridge while you were at the Academy of Dramatic Arts. Is that right?
Yes, indeed.
What was she like back then?
As dreamy as she is now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, she was my best pal there. We hit it off right away. And we've lived to tell the tale. So, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah. I read that you've been experimenting with some version of your character, Claire, long before the TV series came along, right?
Yeah. There was an incarnation of her in an early sketch of something that Phoebe wrote. So I've been playing Claire for, over 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And But what a way to end it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious, have you talked to Phoebe about why she decided to end it? And would you have liked to have seen a third season?
No, we're all pretty, we're digging our heels in more and more now.
Yeah.
The story is complete and we're very happy to sort of to let it go. We're going to continue to collaborate on things. Fleabag is no more, I'm afraid.
I'm sure you got lots of things to look forward to.
Now, yes, indeed.
That character, Claire, is so tightly wound up
You seem nothing like that. And I think somewhere I read that you meditate every day and all that.
Yeah.
How did you even get into that headspace of that character?
I don't know. I'm an actor, I guess.
Right.
That's my job. So it's what I love to do. And I love to play people that are as far reaching from me as possible, because that's what expands me as a human. And that's where I can learn the most and evolve the most. And a lot of people have told me how they've perceived Claire, but I don't think you can look at your characters from the outside in. You have to feel them in your body. So there are a lot of physical traits that Claire has that I wasn't actually aware of until people pointed them out.
Oh, really?
That's a true story. Yeah.
No
and
kidding,
I, and
like
I
what?
Just the rigidity of her body and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same, I think, with all things. And in Quiz, this wonderful character of Diana, who is a real person that I was able to kind of draw on. There was so much. It's something very, very different. I hope people receive it like that, because I've tried to play something different. I mean,
yeah,
she still has
brilliant.
Hard edges, but she's very naive and very sweet and introverted, I think, as a person.
Yeah, it was just terrific. And Quiz is this 3-part limited series based on the true story of how Charles and Diana Ingram attempted this heist of the quiz show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Well, we don't know if they did for sure, and that's
right.
The
that's
ambiguous
part of the mystery.
Question that we're going to I mean, that's the sort of the perception of what happened, is that they did it, and we're hoping to blow that story wide open, because there's a whole side to this story that we haven't seen, and certainly exploring the humanity of those people who went through an incredibly tumultuous and painful time on the back of this scandal, and still are having to deal with the repercussions of that. So
right. I'm curious, how did you go about getting rid of any kind of preconceptions that you might have had about their story? Because they were convicted, and there was a lot of it in the press. So I can see how it would be very easy to come to it with your mind already made up.
Yeah, I think, like with any character that you approach, you have to get into their skin and imagine their experience. And it was really important for Matthew and I to forget what we think we knew and play the truth of the people that had been written in the script. And of course, like, go back to the source material.
Mm-hmm.
And we obviously had access to a lot of material that the wider public won't have done, that we were able to study them. We got to meet them, which was wonderful.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I could think that the subjects of a film that, you know, talks about something that they were convicted for, rightly or wrongly, you know, they might not want to do that.
No, they've been very generous, incredibly sweet. And I think it probably is difficult for them. I don't know. But they've been very, very generous with us and their time. And it was fascinating. And we really wanted to, we were very careful, and we wanted to be sensitive, really. Mm-hmm. But actually, it was much easier than I thought, because it was a sort of foregone conclusion about that they absolutely did it. And that's what's so fascinating about this story, because as soon as you start digging, I mean, even just beyond the superficial nature of it, you start uncovering all sorts of juicy details that were left out of the press. So.
Yeah, and I kept thinking that when I was watching it. And my wife is a lawyer, so we kind of argued about this, because we were watching the trial scene. And I'm like, how can anyone 100% prove beyond a reasonable doubt what was going on in their minds at the time, and whether someone coughing, amounts to cheating, whether they were conveying information in a cough?
I love that you said that, because I think that's the, I think there can be a lot of confusion over what beyond reasonable doubt means to just a regular person. And it wasn't until, I don't know, I watched a lot of shows that talk about that, that you start to have a fuller understanding of what that means. And there is just no way of knowing whether or not he knew the answers. It's not something you can prove. So I think, there's a lot that's contentious and exciting to explore in the story.
Yeah, and we forget how big Millionaire was when it first came out, both in the UK and then in the US a few years later. I didn't even realize it. In my mind, somehow I have this false memory that America originated Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and then the Brits stole it from us, but it's the other way around.
It's the other way around.
You guys had it 4 years before us.
Yeah, we created it, I think it was created in 97, and so it was 4 years later that Charles went on. So Diana had actually been on to the show before right. Charles went on, and her brother Adrian had been on. And we look at all of that in the show because they did have an obsession with quizzes in general, but particularly with this game show. And I think they saw a way in to sort of, you know, they developed techniques, I guess, or they were just privy to information. So they were able to, I guess they wanted to get on the show and they wanted to win the money because they thought they could, ultimately.
We're going to take a quick break and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. Folks, I'm very excited to tell you about my new sponsor. They make some fantastic coffee, and they also do a lot of good in the world. In 2014, Evan Hafer and Army Ranger Matt Best founded Black Rifle Coffee Company to combine two passions, developing premium roast-to-order coffee and supporting the veteran and military community. And recently, they donated over 20,000 bags of coffee to medical workers on the front lines of the pandemic. BRCC offers a variety of roast profiles, all sourced around the world through a rigorous process and roasted in Tennessee and Utah. Evan started roasting his own coffee in 2006 to bring with him overseas during his 20-plus years as an infantryman, special forces soldier, and CIA contractor. He even refitted his Humvee to roast coffee during deployments. Now BRCC currently employs over 200 vets and plans to employ 10,000 eventually. With the Buy a Bag, Give a Bag campaign, BRCC donated over 30,000 pounds of coffee to troops overseas in 2019. Join BRCC's Coffee Club, a free subscription where your chosen coffee is roasted, packaged, and shipped free to your door on your schedule. You also receive discounts and gain access to exclusive products, content, and more. Head to blackriflecoffee.com/kick to order and use promo code KICK for 20% off. That's blackriflecoffee.com/kick with code KICK for 20% off.
It's interesting because your character, Diana Ingram, starts out sort of as just kind of a casual, passive fan of the show. Mm-hmm. And then she gets lured into this bizarre network of obsessive quiz show contestants mm-hmm. who have sort of this love-hate relationship with the show that leads them to band together and conspire to circumvent the protocols and essentially crash Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah, so there's a group of people called The Syndicate, and this is a true story. Now,
did they actually call themselves The Syndicate?
They were called The Syndicate. But Charles and Diana, we don't know for sure. Well, we sort of do and we don't. They were not part of The Syndicate. So Adrian knew about that group, but...
Adrian, who was her brother, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, it's all these tiny little details that sort of have bled into the narrative, and we hope we will clear up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a group of people that just worked out how you could get on the show, and once you were on the show, what you could do to maximize your chances of getting in the chair.
Yeah, and that was fascinating because it seemed remarkably relevant to what we're seeing now 20 years later with the obsessive fan culture that can quickly turn on their heroes and online hacking of movie studios and celebrities and the subversion of traditional media structures. Do you think that there's a through line that can be drawn from that incident way back in 2001 to this moment that we're in right now where the lunatics have sort of taken over the asylum?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to speak to that, but certainly I think something shifted in the world in 2001. And mm-hmm. this, the night that Charles recorded the show was 2 days before 9/11, which is why it didn't get as much press coverage in this country, but was a much bigger news story in the UK. And I do think that was something shifted in the world that year. And I do think, yeah, we are experiencing the repercussions of that now to quite an extreme extent. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember reading about the trial of the Ingrams caper or alleged caper mm-hmm. in the American news, but I don't think that it got nearly as much coverage as it did in the British press. Do you think that maybe that affords some opportunity for, at least here in the U.S., for us to come to it with somewhat of an open mind?
Yeah, I'd love to think that. The British press was incredibly biased against the Ingrams, as there can be no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And so much so that I think a lot of people think that they've seen the episode, but they haven't, because it never transmitted.
Really?
In the UK. No, it was never aired. And there was a documentary made 2 weeks after their conviction by the channel that
the same channel, ITV,
them.
Right?
Yeah, ITV. which sort of, you know, hung them out to dry and explained how they did it. So there could be absolutely no question in anyone's mind. And that's what a lot of people saw. The ratings for that, that people tuned into that, were higher than Princess Diana's funeral.
Really?
Yes,
for that documentary?
For that documentary.
That's incredible.
We mentioned that at the very end of the show. I might need to fact check that one, but... it was incredible. There was a huge amount of press interest. There was a real storm of it. And it's things like that that, without question, influenced the trial. So it wasn't a fair trial. So regardless of whether they did it or not, I think there's a lot to be called into question as to how they were treated throughout that process.
Yeah. And you must have been, I'm just assuming, probably a teenager when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire first came out in, 1998, right?
Yeah.
Did you have any memories
Younger.
Of it? Was it big in your household?
Yeah, it was huge in my household.
Really?
Yeah, I would watch it religiously. And actually, even before I got this job, they have it on British Airways as a game you can play, and I play it all time. I absolutely love it. Yeah. Huge fan, but not to the extent of the Ingrams.
Yeah, because apparently I think that they said in the show that a third of the UK tuned in for that show.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I think at one time they had, our population obviously slightly lower then, but I know they definitely hit around 18 to 20 million viewers at one time, yeah.
Yeah, at a time when I guess you could still do that. That'll probably never happen again now because media is so splintered.
It is splintered, but there's a lot of incredible content being made.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
But as I understand it, they're bringing it back over here.
Oh, are they really?
They're relaunching it. Yeah,
with Regis or someone else?
With Jimmy Kimmel, I've heard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I heard. And they have brought it back in the UK recently with Jeremy Clarkson. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys had a better host, though.
We had Chris Tarrant, who's played by Michael Sheen.
Right.
In our version. Yeah. He's absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. And Michael's so great. I feel like in the UK, pretty much any British celebrity has to be played by Michael Sheen if there's going to be a movie version.
He's the go-to. Yeah. No. And he's absolutely brilliant. I had no idea how they were going to try and... because Chris Tarrant has blonde, flat hair,
right.
And Michael has a shock of dark, thick curls, and I couldn't fathom how they were going to do it, but they put a bald cap on him and then a wig on top, and it's so affecting. It just looks fantastic.
Yeah, he's just terrific. And what was it like working with Matthew McFadden of Succession?
It was absolutely magical. He is... beyond dreamy, huge, huge fan of Succession, who the Fleabag family have adopted. We've formed an alliance called Suckbag. And it was an absolute, truly.
Who else is in Suckbag?
Who's in Suckbag? Well, the whole gang. Brian, Kieran, Nick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all of them. Sarah Snook. Yeah. We're huge fans of them all, and we're thrilled to have gotten to know them over the last sort of few months, weeks. And working with Matthew was such a dream. He's someone I've admired and revered for a really long time, but particularly because of his role in Succession. I'd been talking about him a lot just before he was cast as Charles, and because I really think he's just been given the role of his life in that. And I was like, oh, finally someone is letting that man just let rip, and he's just so extraordinary. And
so
then
funny.
He gets to play Charles, and he is so moving, and his performance is so beautiful. I'm just genuinely moved by it, and we've both been messaging each other just saying we love watching our stuff back, because we had an immediate rapport, and he's such a brilliant and experienced professional, and he looked out for me and I looked out for him, and I'm way less experienced with screen work than him. And no, we had a fantastic time together.
Yeah, and he's so great at playing those characters, whether it's Succession or Quiz. Those guys who, I don't want to say that they get overlooked, but they get kind of pushed around or backed into a corner, you know, totally unintentionally,
yeah.
You know, where everything just spirals out of their control and it was never their intention.
Yeah.
I suppose
they both have that. I've not considered that, but yeah, I suppose they do both have that.
And Quiz was written by James Graham, who wrote this fantastic Brexit movie for HBO with Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah. You've worked with him before, right?
James, I haven't worked with before, but I've known him for a very long time.
Oh, really?
I actually know James through Phoebe. I've known James for about 12 years. Phoebe had a brilliant theatre company called Dry Right, and James was one of the people that I met through that. This is when we were, you know, this is back in 2007. Mm-hmm. This is before any kind of version of anything to do with Claire or Fleabag or anything existed, and so it was really, really wonderful to finally get to work together on something so extraordinary. And I think James is just an unbelievable talent, and he's spinning so many plates. So you're going to be hearing a lot more about him.
Yeah. I think he was nominated for a Tony for his play Ink this past year.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And you get to work with the great director, Stephen Frears.
Yes.
Fantastic.
What a legend.
Worked with him, I assume. Have you?
No, I haven't worked with him before, but yeah. I hope I get to work with him again because I just had the best time. He made me laugh a lot, and he's a brilliant director. His notes were just always extraordinary because he just leaves the power in your hands. Mm-hmm. He really trusts his actors, and he casts very carefully because of that. And he'll just come and he'll prompt you with a question and let you find it, and he'll just remind you of something, and it's so subtle and delicate. It's a brilliant way of working, and I felt so safe and kind of empowered on that set. It was really, really wonderful working experience.
And the film explores every aspect of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, from how the sound design to the light design, even the chair the contestants sit in, were designed to really ratchet up the tension.
Yeah.
What was it like being on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on the set and sitting in that hot seat as a contestant? Did your blood pressure go through the roof?
It's really extraordinary because they made an exact replica of the studio. So we were in it, and we got to experience it, and we had a full lighting and sound rig. So we got to really be in it. We didn't play it every time because, of course, for filming technical purposes, you can't, you know, always use the sound. But when we did, you did really start to panic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that music is built, it's called the heartbeat, the music that runs underneath whilst you're waiting to answer the question. And it did make you feel unsettled. So very effective, well done, whoever designed that. And it was really, really fun. It was just amazing, the whole project.
Quiz was actually produced by the same channel in Britain, ITV, which originally aired Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and then did that documentary. Now, some of the producers and execs in the story aren't exactly portrayed in the most flattering manner. I wonder, do you know if there was any reluctance at ITV to be sort of the butt of the joke here?
No, and I, as far as I'm aware, they're really happy with the show. And I think what's extraordinary about the team on this is they've managed to strike a really great balance in terms of representing people. I'm sure some of the actors might have taken some artistic license and had some fun and things. And but the feedback we've had is really positive. So and I think you can sort of tell it's kind of tongue in cheek, a lot of the ITV stuff. So hopefully no one's offended.
Yeah, it was very, very entertaining.
Yeah.
Before we go, Diana and Charles Ingram, their case is apparently coming up for appeal sometime this year. Are you hoping that they get off?
I am actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a criminal conviction in this instance is a little out of proportion. And I also, like we say, if we really, really dig deep into the meaning of beyond reasonable doubt, I think it's not something that you can prove.
Yeah.
So I'd certainly like it to be examined closely.
Definitely. Well, the 3-part limited series Quiz comes out on AMC this spring. Sean Clifford, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Sean Clifford for coming on the show. The 3-part miniseries Quiz premieres Sunday, May 31st at 10/9 Central on AMC. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there.
5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.